This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. They say good things come in threes.
Cause it's one, two, three.
Time to test that theory. Here is RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
Oh, we're back in the friendly confines of the Evco Development Studios here in Upper Lafayette. We got a ton of energy. No lagging whatsoever from our joyous, wonderful day in Baton Rouge yesterday at Pluckers. We also got to go check out the Marucci facility, which was amazing, by the way, before we went to cover some games last night. James Mesh looks like he's fresh. He's ready to go.
Yeah.
Dawson didn't need an extra cup of coffee this morning. He's fine.
Yeah. And look, for me, it's not really anything that was done in Baton Rouge because we were treated very well. The folks over at Pluckers handled everything fantastically. The food was great as well. And then, of course, the Marucci tour you mentioned. And then, going out, seeing some good softball and baseball. For me, the issue is allergies, and it's pollen. And it's becoming a real situation. I had a conversation with the people in charge of pollen. They're going to try and figure it out for me. But it is really coming to a point. And the problem for me is the only real – this is, nobody's business, I guess, but the real allergy medicine that helps me is the stuff that makes me sleepy.
There it is.
And so then I battle this. Do I want to have to try to fall asleep at 2:00 in the afternoon?
No.
Or do I want to just not be able to breathe and be sneezing everywhere? We're fighting through it, though. We're fighting through it.
The good thing is, pushing through.
The good thing is allergies aren't contagious either. So, I'm able to power through it.
There we go. So maybe a little sluggish, James Mesh. You know how he likes to live his lifestyle, right? A little bit of a night owl, our guy with the best head of hair in sports talk radio in the states of Mississippi and Louisiana. We got back late last night from BR, and he's like, I'm just getting started. Right? I mean, that's how he rolls.
It's prime time.
It's prime time for our guy. Dawson's fighting allergies. He's the son of Iceman, a.k.a. 2 Degrees, and I'm the big, bald, bearded, and beautiful one. We're here for you. A condensed show today because we got some daytime baseball.
That's what everybody needs, more Houston Astros in their life, huh?
If they continue to play they did the last 2 days, I'll be happy about that.
You will.
Because they're facing my Atlanta Braves. It wouldn't pain me to see the Braves come into Minute Maid and get a 3-game sweep. Just saying. Not going to be greedy, though. Already won the series. I'll take it. Baseball's a long season. It's 162. So we got a bit of a shorter show today, but we got two tremendous guests lined up for you. Jay Walker. He'll be joining us, the voice of the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. The baseball team went to Hammond America last night and beat the brakes off of the Lions, and they'll look to do it again tonight. They're at the Teague. So we'll talk to Jay about all things baseball. Then Ron Higgins, the Mad Dog, our buddy from the Shreveport Bossier Journal. We'll talk all things LSU. We were at softball last night between the Tigers and the Cajuns. Our guy D'Lo was. James and I were at baseball as they struggled for a while. But they pulled out a win against UNO as they now head on the road. And then, of course, we'll find time today to talk Houston Astros with you, even though Dawson doesn't want to. And then we'll talk about the New Orleans Pelicans. And we'll dive into all of that. Of course, if you want to chop it up with us because you weren't able to get in on the Mike's Marine Hotline yesterday because we had so many guests for our special LSU-centric show there at Pluckers on Nicholson, feel free to do so. Mike's Marine Hotline's always open, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Mike's Marine keeping you on the water. But we're going to start off things like we do always at this time. It's time for our today's specials.
The fellas can't help you with your lunch plans. But they can serve up the top stories of the day in bite-sized pieces.
Order up.
Time to order up today's specials on RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
As RP3 mentioned there, I got to see the softball game last night, Cajuns and Tigers over in Baton Rouge. It's, of course, a great rivalry and one that's gone back and forth over the last few years, not only in the regular season, but some pretty big postseason affairs as well. And last year, it was the Cajuns who won that regional, winning the last two games of it, coming out of the loser's bracket and booking their ticket to the Supers, where they went on to face the Washington Huskies. So this time around, again, a lot of intrigue. And this LSU team started off red hot. They won, 20-plus games in a row to start the season. Then they've cooled off a little bit in SEC play, but still in fifth place in a very competitive league that, features likely double-digit or close to it teams that are going to be competing in the regionals. So They came in with some momentum, and the Cajuns came in with a ton of momentum because they had, after that win against Oklahoma, snapping the 70-plus game winning streak, they had set fire, really, and just rolled through the Sun Belt Conference, including a top 20 series win over the Texas State Bobcats over the weekend. Game started about as well as you could think for the Cajuns. Maya Davis hit a ball to the warning track that probably would have gotten out if it wasn't for some wind blowing in. And then a base hit, and Laney Crater hits a two-run homer, and you're up 2-0, feeling like it could be three, and really looking good. LSU answers with one run in the bottom of the first, and then just kind of chipped away, ended up tying it after the second. And the Cajun offense that scored two runs in the first never really got it going after that. They had a couple scoring opportunities later in the game, but the interesting thing is that Beth Tarina stuck with Sydney Berzon, who started the game, struggled in the first, as we mentioned, but then cruised and threw six shutout afterwards. There was one key moment where Sissy Vasquez came up with a couple runners on base, a chance to tie the game with a base hit. She had runners at second and third with two outs, and she struck out on three straight pitches. Berzon was able to just bear down and get a big time out. And for the Cajuns, Chloe Riaceto was just a little bit off. You could tell. And look, she's not a strikeout-based pitcher. Me and Kevin were talking about this throughout the game. Sometimes she just struggles to find that put-away pitch. And LSU did a good job kind of being patient with their approach, fouling off some tough pitches, and eventually finding a couple of seeing-eye singles and a few balls they hit hard as well. So the big, you know, kind of blow in this game is Sierra Briggs, who in her other three at-bats looked awful. Struck out three times, twice against Riaceto, once against Sam Landry. But with runners at second and third, she delivered a two-out, two-run single to give the Tigers a 4-2 lead, and it was a lead that they would not relinquish. So a game where, look, defensively, LSU played really solid behind their pitching staff and just one pitcher in Berzon on this day. Taylor Pleasance, one of the best shortstops in the country, showed you why. She made a ton of big plays at short. And the Cajuns just had a couple defensive miscues. Those runs in the first and second inning could have been prevented. It would have been tough plays to be made, but they could have been prevented. And all in all, I thought the Cajuns did not play their A game at all. LSU, maybe not either, but closer to their A game. And that resulted in the Tigers getting a victory. It means next week's rematch, which will be in Lafayette, is that much more important, especially for the Cajuns as they search for these big-time RPI wins. And still that chance to go, as Kevin talked about, the five games, three against Texas State, two against LSU, all top 20 opponents. You go 3-2 in those, you put yourself in a good spot. They're now 2-2. With one to play. So from their perspective, that's important for the Tigers. Now you got to go on the road against a top 10 SEC team in Tennessee. We'll see how they play in Knoxville, but they're looking to use last night's game as a little bit of momentum to charge them through the last portion of the SEC schedule.
The LSU baseball team was one of three of our area teams that we care about that were all in action for midweek games, and they were taking on the UNO Privateers of the Southland Conference. And look, this is a pretty scrappy, pretty good UNO team, right? They've won over 20 games already. So they're not terrible, but if you're the defending national champs, you should be able to beat up on UNO pretty easily. Well, it was a bit of a workmanlike performance for Jay Johnson's squad, who's still trying to find themselves after getting swept over the weekend against top 10 ranked Tennessee in Knoxville. And it didn't start off well for Thatcher Hurd. And he's been on the struggle bus all year. He was on the struggle bus for most of last year until he kind of turned it on for the postseason and was one of their better pitchers. But he gets the first out, and you're like, okay. Then he walks the next hitter on five pitches, and then that guy's still second base. And then Privateers right fielder Mitchell Sanford comes to the plate and says, thank you for throwing a meat pitch right across the plate. I will put that promptly in the right field bleachers. Thatcher was not good. He just wasn't. Two innings, two runs on two hits, two walks, 38 pitches, didn't have his control, didn't have a lot of velocity. And whether that was Jay's plan or not, it became a Johnny Holstaff type of performance. No pitcher pitched more than two innings for the Tigers as they went through six or seven guys last night. Now, the wind was blowing the way it was at Alex Box Stadium. And they answered, right? Paxton Kling led off the inning with a walk, stole second base, reached third on the throwing error, and then Tommy Tanks came up, laced a one-out single into right field, which brought home Kling. But then UNO extended its lead again as they homered off Samuel Dudden. But Dudden calmed down, struck out two of his next three batters, and that kind of gave them what they needed. They cut into the lead as Jared Jones got his 15th home run of the season. And then they came in the fifth. Kling drew a four-pitch walk, which prompted UNO to pull their starter, who had done a nice job against LSU. And they brought in Trey Oose, and the rest was history. Like, LSU just teed off on him. He gave up a triple, and then a ground out. Both of those scored runs. And then LSU added in the bottom of the sixth when Travinsky hit a monster home run. Literally, it just skied it, and it just carried and carried and carried. It went past the left field landing seats. And then Brady Neal said, I'd like to hit a home run, too. I'll hit it to the right field. So they pull out the win. It's the 65th time they've beat UNO in their series in 102 meetings. And they're going to try to get some momentum now, headed into a winnable series. They have to go on the road. They're taking on Missouri, who is one of the two worst teams in the SEC. But they also beat Florida. And in a series, they won a series against the Gators. So Jay Johnson's team is going to have to get kind of it together, so to speak. But they weren't the only teams in action. Want to give love to the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, number 14th ranked team in the country. They got one step closer to 30 wins, and we're not even to the end of April. They tee off on Southeastern. They explode for 7 runs in the second inning, add 4 more in the third as they coast to a 15-8 win. Things got a little shaky late, right, with some bullpen action. Lions were able to get 6 runs in the bottom of the seventh, but 14 hits, 15 runs. Cajuns just demolished the competition, and they get one step closer to getting to win number 30, which they can do tonight as Southeastern makes the short trip from Hammond up to Lafayette. First pitch will be at 6 o'clock as Matt Deggs' team continues to build momentum. You'd love to see them to get to 30 wins, and then you'd love to see them carry that momentum as they have a huge matchup, a top 25 matchup with Coastal Carolina in Conway this weekend. Also, shout out to the McNeese Cowboys. They had to battle. They took on their former conference foes, Sam Houston State Bearcats, and McNeese picked up their 17th win of the season. They improved to 17-18 as they take down Sam Houston 5-4. So a much needed win for Justin Hill's team. They needed it. Brock Barthelemy came in the final innings, the relief pitcher. He solidified things. They were able to get the win there at Joe Miller Ballpark last night. That snaps a losing streak for them, and they're now 17-18. Can they start to maybe put some things together? We'll see about that. It's been a struggling season for the Cowboys, but they were able to get a midweek win as well there at the Joe. So all three of the teams that we cover earned some midweek victories last night.
And then I move on to the association, as we had a couple of play-in games last night, one of them being the local team, the New Orleans Pelicans. That was a goal for the Pelicans was to not play in the play-in tournament because they have been playing well all season. However, because of a loss to the Lakers to end the regular season, now they had to play in it and play the Lakers once again. Now, the thing is about playing a team twice in a couple of days span, basically back-to-back, you almost feel like you have a little bit of an advantage, especially since you're the home team. The only thing is the Pelicans had been dreadful over the last couple of games at home, so it was really worrisome. And then you kind of look at the history of, well, 7 seeds in the play-in, it's been a short history, but it's been good for the 7 seed because they're usually able to lock it in that first game and then just move on. However, looking at last night's game against the Los Angeles Lakers, the Pels were doing just that. They got off to a fast start. They were leading 34-26 at the end of the first quarter. However, you get into the second quarter, and the Lakers go on a 15-2 run. Eventually, the Pels are down 60-50 at halftime. Zion, however, he was getting his. He had 20 points at the half. And the thing is, AD, he was less than stellar for the first three quarters or so. He really didn't have his offensive game. However, he was still getting rebounds against Jonas Valanciunas, who actually did play a little bit more last night. Lakers did get on another fast start to begin the second half, but Zion continued to show up. And down midway into the fourth quarter, The Pels race back to tie the game at 93, courtesy of a Zion dunk to get the crowd into it. So everyone was getting hyped. They were down for a majority of the game. They had the early lead, but since then, the Lakers were continuing to handle the Pelicans on defense. Zion, even though he had an absolute phenomenal night, he was finally able to show up against the Lakers. He had to leave the game late due to leg soreness with about 3:13 to go. It was back and forth the last couple of minutes, but D'Angelo Russell, he had hit a three for LA to put them up four with 51 seconds to go, and then you kind of had to play the free throw game. You had to foul them, try to get a couple shots up. Hopefully the Lakers miss a couple of the free throws. They didn't really do that, and then the Lakers end up winning 110-106 to take that seven seed from the Pelicans. And now because of that, they have to go on and play the Kings on Friday because the Kings ended up beating the Warriors 118-94. Maybe we'll get into that a little bit later, but that's going to be a matchup which you feel like would be in favor of the Pelicans, but we're not totally sure what's going to happen because, yes, we've seen that they've been able to beat the Kings all five times this season, but are you able to get to six? A couple of other notes that were made from the game. Friend of the program, Rod Walker, he had made these notes. The Pelicans are just the second seven seed to lose to an eight seed in the play-in tournament. The other time was last year when number seven seed Miami lost to the Hawks, but then the Heat won their next game versus the Bulls, the 10 seed, to get the eight seed, and then went on to go to the NBA Finals. Do I think that that's necessarily going to happen? I don't know with this Pelicans team, but Zion leaving with leg soreness, hopefully he'll be able to get some rest today and tomorrow and be ready for the game on Friday against the Kings because B.I. still not looking that great. He's still not quite himself yet coming back from that injury. CJ continues to not look good in big games. And then if Zion's not going to be there, even though you've had good games against the Kings, if you don't have your big three, are you going to be able to handle it? That also leads to our poll question of the day. What's the biggest issue with the Pelicans' loss last night against the Lakers? Was it CJ's struggles? Is it Willie Green's coaching decisions? Is it Zion getting hurt late? Or is it because B.I. isn't playing much and not up to his standards? We're going to go ahead and take a quick timeout, but when we come back, we're going to talk with the voice of the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, talk about all things baseball on the diamond. You're listening to the ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
The biggest headlines in the world of sports are discussed here. ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
We welcome you back into RP3 D'Lo and Mesh here, back in the EFCO Development Studios. First time in a long time for us all, three of us here in the comfy confines of the EFCO Development Studios. I'm going to go ahead and power through these allergies and just try and complete sentences, which is seemingly difficult for me right now. But maybe I'll get some help from our next guest, and that is Jay Walker, the voice of the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. Jay, how was your trip to lovely Hammond, America?
I made it there. I made it back. Therefore, it was a very successful trip.
And you can throw in a victory while you were over there. I take it from what I watched on the broadcast and followed along with that the wind was blowing out. Is that accurate?
Oh, that's very accurate, and it was blowing pretty sternly.
And the Cajuns took advantage of that in the early goings there with a big outburst. They got a run in the first, but then they got seven in the second. Some of it was the usual suspects with John Taylor. But they also, you know, got some really nice moments mixed into that game. Connor Cuff hit his first career collegiate home run. What were your takeaways from an offensive explosion? And we'll get a little bit to some of the bullpen troubles later on. But what did you think of the offense coming out, especially after they were pretty sluggish in a series they still managed to sweep over the weekend?
Yeah, that was a good bounce-back night. You know, Coach Degg specifically talked about it after the game on Sunday, that they were going to have to get back to some basics with their approach at the plate. And they worked on that during BP. And they came out and executed. So, you know, that was good to see. You know, and they kind of hit up and down the lineup, and even guys who didn't get hits barreled up some balls. So overall, it was a very good offensive performance.
You know, from a pitching standpoint, it's unique because sometimes you figure late in the game, you're getting some different guys some opportunities, maybe a couple different younger players would have struggled, but it really seemed like it was just Brendan Moody didn't have his best day. And we know it's been a battle for Moody to try and, you know, put it together this year health-wise and production-wise. But JT Etheridge looked sharp, struck out 8. So what was your takeaways from the kind of mixed performance on the mound?
Well, I thought JT Etheridge was the story of the game, to be quite honest with you. He, you know, he's making his first start of the year, and, you know, Matt had said, he said, I see him as a starter. And so, you know, we're going to see him in that role again at some point in time, which is very, very important, because once you get to the conference tournament, you ain't getting by on 3 starters. So the fact that that he went out, had what I thought was a very, very good outing. I don't know that his slider was at its best, but his fastball was right there. His change was solid. And like I said, I really thought he was the biggest story of the night.
You know, I wanted to ask you about, you know, some of the other happenings in the Sun Belt Conference. The Cajuns are getting set to go play a very good Coastal team that we've learned about and knew about coming into the season, and they just beat North Carolina last night. Old Dominion beat a top 10 ranked Virginia team. It's nothing new for the Sun Belt to get big midweek wins over Power Conference teams, but now that they've kind of settled into that number 4 spot as an RPI conference, you know, I know the Cajuns' RPI is going to be a conversation if they keep winning, but they don't end up in the 20s or in the teens as far as being a host. But I just wonder if the committee will value more the fact that they have the opportunity to win the 4th best league in the country.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to enter into it as far as hosting is concerned. I think that ship has sailed. I think what is going to happen if the Cajuns continue to play well is they're going to be the number 2 seed that nobody wants to see, because the Cajuns pitch as well as they do. So, you know, hosting is not, I don't think that's part of the conversation at all. But, you know, right now the goal is keep winning and win the regular season championship. I think that's the goal right now. If you do that, the rest of it will take care of itself, and by that I mean there'll be a solid 2 seed somewhere.
We're talking with Jay Walker, voice of the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. He joins us here on RP3 D'Lo and Mesh. All right, bud, this team hit the ball and hit the ball extremely well, and last night's a win. The bullpen gave up some runs late, which, you know, I know Coach Deggs isn't thrilled about, but they do get a road win, and then they get to turn around and play Southeastern yet again tonight at the Teague. What do you make of what you saw from the Cajuns in the first of 2 midweek games against the same opponent?
Well, you know, I think that this is going to be a very different game, Ray, because Southeastern has the weekend off this weekend. So I expect to see their best arms in the game tonight. We did not see that last night. One of the guys that they threw is, you know, a pretty good bullpen guy, but we're probably going to see their weekend starters tonight. And so it's going to be a very different game in that I wouldn't expect you to, you know, go out and put up 12 in the first 3 innings. Southeastern can pitch a little bit. They've got one guy in particular that I think is an all-conference type guy. So it's going to be a very different game tonight. This is going to look more probably, at least from what Southeastern throws at you, this is going to look more like a conference, a weekend conference game for them.
And let's move ahead to the weekend, because it's the marquee matchup in probably all of college baseball. A pair of top 25 ranked opponents are going to be facing off in Conway. Cajuns 14th in the D1 baseball, top 25. Coastal Carolina 19th. They're very similar. They have a ton of history. Just how big is this weekend series going to be for the Cajuns and for the Sun Belt Conference?
Well, I think it's big from the standpoint of, look, these last 5 are pretty rugged. And the first thing that you got to do when you're facing what they're facing is you've got to go out and show yourselves as well as everybody else that you're going to beat or have a chance to beat the teams that you have on your weekend schedule the rest of the way. So I think this series is really big in that regard. Secondly, Coastal Carolina is very good at home. And part of the reason is the wind's usually blowing out. It's a hitter's ballpark, and they can really swing the bat. I did a little research, and here's a statistic for you. 20 times this year, Coastal Carolina has scored five or more runs in an inning. Three times, they've scored 10 or more runs. They kind of get into a feeding frenzy with each other. Once they get rolling, it's really hard to stop them. So, you know, the Cajun pitching staff is going to be challenged. And the biggest thing is going to be keep the ball down, keep it in the ballpark. And on the other edge of this, you know, analysis of the weekend, Coastal Carolina's pitching staff throws hard, but they've been known to walk a few people here and there. So I think, you know, for the Cajuns, patience at the plate is going to be very important.
We'll get you out of here with this. Spring football is starting to wind down. The spring game will be a week from Saturday. It'll be obviously inside the indoor practice facility, and it'll be closed to the general public. But I know you've been keeping tabs on things and kind of are connected and seeing what's going on. What's the thing that's maybe been the biggest surprise for you, pleasant surprise rather, from what you can gather from what Coach Dez is doing in year three at the helm there for spring football?
Yeah, I don't know that there have been any huge surprises. You know, the thing, and I think I may have mentioned this before spring practice started, I'm really intrigued by what the Cajuns are going to look like on the defensive side of the ball with a brand new defensive coordinator, a guy who's been around and he's, you know, I mean, the man has coached in the National Football League. So I'm really interested to see what the defense is going to look like once, you know, once game atmosphere happens. You know, that's the biggest question for me, but it's not a worried question as much as it is an excited question. I'm just excited to see what they look like.
Jay, always appreciate your time, brother. Have a great call tonight there at the Teague against Southeastern, and enjoy your trip over to Conway for the huge three-game set between the top 25 opponents this weekend, my friend.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Go Cajuns.
It's Jay Walker, voice of the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, talking mainly baseball, a little football there as well. We got to take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll give you an update on that poll question of the day. Maybe talk some Houston Astros. Maybe talk whatever what James Mesh wants to talk about.
That's a better idea.
That's a better idea. Let's let James handle it.
It's a better idea. You know what else is a better idea? Having mics open. That'd be good. That'd be a plus.
Sometimes. Sometimes it's better for my mic to be off, honestly.
Cool.
Prevents
man.
Me from saying
man's
anything.
Hard on himself today. Hard on himself today. We got to take a timeout. More coming up right here on ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
Helping you get through your workday. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back to RP3, D'Lo and Mesh, as you're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana sports station, broadcasting live for the first time in a while from the EFCO Development Studios here in Upper Lafayette. Let's update you on the poll question of the day. Of course, it was also one of our today's specials. We had asked you on Facebook and on X, what was the biggest issue in the Pelicans' loss last night to the Lakers? CJ McCollum's struggles right now has 48% of the votes. Zion getting hurt late got 40% of the votes. 8% say Willie Green's coaching, and then 4% saying B.I. doesn't play much. We did get a couple of comments. Tana said, the answer is yes, but the fact is CJ has been way off lately. Don't know if the headspace or nagging injuries or something is messing him up, but dude just doesn't play in play-in wise to me. Still fiery, a heck of a leader, but doesn't play when it matters the most. John Paul said, why are New Orleans teams always getting bit by the injury bug at the worst time? Drew, Mike, Alvin, Zion, B.I., the list goes on and on.
Here's the thing with CJ, though. He had been excellent leading into this. So, and I
yeah,
mean,
during the away stretch, he was phenomenal.
I'll be just as critical because I think in clutch moments he has disappeared for most of his post career. But
and most of his career, period.
Yeah, I mean, look, he had Dame alongside him for a long time, and Dame took a lot of those big shots. But CJ is part of the reason you even were in the spot you were in, because he was unbelievable. He's leading the NBA in 3-point percentage over the last however many months. So I get that.
Who is the closer of the team?
Well, that's a question we've been asking forever. And part
of
the problem is,
right?
You know, I think they've done a poor job running sets in those spots. I've said that for a long time. And I understand there's a lot of NBA teams, like when the Mavs need a bucket, they put it in Luka's hands and they tell everybody to get out the way because they have a guy who is the guy. The Pelicans, even if Brandon Ingram's a great offensive scorer and a great offensive player, there's been times where when defenses, you know, tighten up, give you a little bit more effort down the stretch when the game's on the line, it hasn't worked out when you've just given the ball to B.I. and said, make something happen. It hasn't worked out when you've given the ball to Zion and said, make something happen. So I would much rather them take a page out of, you know, by the way, go look at some Dan Hurley stuff with UConn. Run a set, run something. Let's actually try to run a play to get a look instead of just giving the ball to an elite player, even if that's against the grain of the NBA. But no, they still don't know who the closer is, and that's a big problem. I did want to throw this, by the way, while we're on NBA, because I don't know when we would have another chance to talk about it. The Jontay Porter news that James shared with us in the break, essentially, he's a player. He's the brother of Michael Porter Jr. He played for the Raptors. There was this thing that came out, this probe into some of his gambling stuff. They were concerned that he had, you know, maybe been jeopardizing the integrity of the league, whatever. Yeah, they decided to ban him for life because he supposedly did, tell people medical information about himself and or pull himself out of games in order, you know, for prop betting. It gets a little worse because apparently he also bet on NBA games. So now they said that he bet on as many as 13 NBA games. As small as $15, as large as $22,000. And he did not bet on games he played in, but he did bet at times on his team, the Toronto Raptors, to lose.
Not optimal.
So that was from Joe Pompliano. So it went from bad to worse here. And obviously, I think the NBA did what they had to do, which is ban the player for life. But we talk a lot about the betting stuff, the slippery slope that it is. That's a crazy thing to have come out. Like, that's pretty wild that a player was not only giving information to others, holding himself potentially out of games, but also betting on his team to lose when he wasn't playing. That's wild. That is wild stuff.
And it's just another example in the course of the last year of stupidity run amok when it comes to betting, right? Don't forget, it was around this time last year that the Alabama baseball coach got busted for pulling his ace, who's now at LSU, by the way, and making sports bets. Like, these guys, sports betting is everywhere now. And I guess these guys, whether they're the actual athletes themselves or coaches, say, hey, because it's on my phone, no one can trace it. Hold on, wait for it. Dum-dum. Like, it's easier to trace now than it's ever been before. Like, it's not hard. Like, it's just so much ignorance on how things work. And, like, you've jeopardized your coaching career. You've jeopardized your playing career. We're still waiting to find out what's going to happen with Kayshawn Boutte in that case. That could possibly jeopardize his career. Like, you're throwing away careers where you can make hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions of dollars over betting. Really?
And again, you know, the other aspect to this that I would imagine maybe a little bit of the issue is that this stuff's probably been going on for a while now. Like, not probably. It has been going on for
yes.
a while now, right? And it was, I would imagine, a little harder to trace it when it wasn't being done through legalized apps and it was done through, you know, offshore bookies, whatever else it was being done, you know, on paper, being tracked in an Excel sheet offline, whatever it was being done with before.
Did you just say Excel sheet offline?
Excel sheet, like an Excel, like Microsoft.
Oh, like Microsoft Excel. Nice.
Yeah, I don't know if that, but I'm saying.
Good reference.
Listen, I don't know how they were tracking it. I wasn't, you know, running one of
sure,
these things.
You don't know how they were tracking it.
You weren't all a fly on the wall there? Not knowing what was going on?
Surprisingly to some, no, I wasn't running these offshore gambling rings. No.
That's disappointing.
But anyway, I'd imagine there's plenty of players that did it and never got caught with it, right? Threw a few bucks on an opponent's game or, you know, hey, this team, and didn't ever. And so I guess now maybe part of the issue is they're still doing it, but now it is traceable and it is, you know, something that the league's cracking down on. I don't, it's crazy, though. I mean, it's literally everywhere. We got a magazine sitting here on the desk, and there's ads for it. Like,
yep.
it is everywhere. And it's the players have to obviously educate themselves, and this is pretty simple. I mean, you talk about the line being blurred between good and bad. this is a situation where it was pretty obvious which side you were on. You know what I mean? There's no case to be made. And people have done it forever on the Pete Rose thing. Well, if he wasn't betting on this certain thing, it was okay and this and that. And some of that stuff, I guess I'll give you, but it's pretty simple to me. It's just don't do it if you're in that situation.
Right. Like, I get the temptedness because you would have that type of information like, oh, I got this information that most of the public doesn't know.
But that's the whole point of why it's illegal.
Like, I know.
I mean,
that's what I'm saying. It's like it's tempting because you have all this information right here and it feels like, well, this is just easy money that I can make in my back pocket. And I could just make a couple extra bucks by just throwing down a bet on a team or a player that I think or that I already know have some information on that gives me an advantage. But like that's the whole thing. You can't do that. If you're a part of a sport and you play a sport or you coach a sport and you have information that you can withhold from other people or give to other people, that's against the rules.
It is just like insider trading, right?
You can't do that.
It is, and insider trading has been a thing for a very long time, and there's been a lot of high-profile cases about it involved and with millions of dollars and people who thought they were, you know, above the law and stuff. It's just, I don't know. It's a wild thing.
It is absolutely bananas what's going on when it comes to sports betting and all these guys. I want to quickly ask, while we have a few minutes here, about the Golden State Warriors. I listened to Steve Kerr's comments last night after they got absolutely mollywopped by Sacramento in the play-in tournament. That, hey, we want Klay Thompson back. Klay Thompson, who, by the way, didn't make a single field goal.
0-for-10.
And who doesn't look like he can get enough elevation off the court to even make a shot anymore. Remember, they also had Chris Paul on this roster who's announced that he doesn't want to retire. And they traded away young pieces who they didn't think were working out because they made a priority to run it back with the vets. The problem is that you don't have those glue guys on Golden State's roster anymore like you used to when you had Iguodala and Sean Livingston and other guys, right? They're not there anymore. And Steph is a year older. Klay is a year older. Draymond. Both Draymond and Klay look like they're on the back end, the twilight of their career. They don't look like they can play at a high level anymore. And all I heard from Steve Kerr was, well, we definitely want Klay back, and we want Draymond back, and we'd love to have Chris Paul back. Like, why did the Warriors think that they want to run this back with the unit that they have? It's obviously flawed. It's not a good roster, constructed roster, and you're not a championship team the way they're constructed. Like, why would you want to run it back with these guys again?
Well, how about an interesting comparison here? We're not there yet. We're not there at all. But I'm going to write something about the Astros this week and about the championship window, and we still think it's open. I'm not suggesting that it's not, right? But when you have what's a dynasty. Look, the Warriors had a dynasty. I don't think there's any question that, right? It's multiple titles. It's across, you know, different spans of winning and greatness and, you know, a full decade of it. And the Astros are in the midst of the same thing, in my opinion. Multiple titles, 7 trips to the ALCS, all this other stuff. But when that window closes, I think it's really, really hard for the people who created it to accept it, which is why I'm even more surprised, because when you heard the Bob Myers situation go down, I thought that was a clear opportunity to break it because the engineer
Correct.
Of it all was stepping away.
But
now, and there was a lot of signs last offseason that felt like they were going to break it up. And then Draymond with his antics again and again this year, it felt pretty clear to me that they were going to blow this thing up at the end of the season. But now they're kind of backing their tracks up a little
bit. Or at least Kerr is. That doesn't mean that the front office shares his vision, right?
Maybe so, and maybe that's what the deal is.
And by the way, the team salary for Golden State this year was $205.6 million. Their tax penalty was $176.9. That's $382.5 million spent on a team that was the 10 seed and got eliminated by Sacramento in the play-in tournament. Woof. We got to take a timeout. We'll wrap up hour number one. That's all coming up next right here on ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, your home for the best local sports talk in Southwest Louisiana.
So we had an interesting discussion off the air, and Dawson and I disagree here. And that's okay. I would love to see, for nostalgic purposes, have Chris Paul come back and provide the leadership that's needed for the Pellies. And he doesn't want to retire. I just don't think he's got enough left to actually help you get over the hump. If you're talking three, four years ago, yes. But you've seen him age rapidly in the last 2 years. And I get what you're saying, that he would provide some leadership for those guys. But these guys are now going to be in the league for 5, 6, 7 years. Like, is the guy who's almost 40 going to help them in that regard? They don't have a closer. They don't have a guy that can close out a game for them. If it was we get in the time machine, I'd say all day long. You get me Chris Paul from 3, 4 years ago? Okay. But I don't think adding Chris Paul would make them marginally better. I really don't. I don't think it would make that much of a difference.
I think when you look at the numbers of what he did with Golden State this year, he played in 58 games. He had 59 games in Phoenix last year. 2 years ago, remember, he was an all-star with Phoenix. That was that last year, right after the run of the NBA Finals. What he did this year is play 26 minutes a game, career low, obviously, because he's on the back end of it. Still shot 44%. That's better than a year ago. Shot 37% from three. That's the same percentage from a year ago. Shot an average 7 assists a game in just 24 minutes and 9.2 points this year.
But he's a role player. That's Steph's team.
Right.
Like, you're wanting him to come to New Orleans to be the leader.
No, I'm wanting him to
come to New
Orleans.
He's not the leader in Golden State.
I'm wanting him to come to New Orleans off the bench. I want him to be that leader of the second unit that can facilitate for you and get these guys who have so much offensive talent but can't seem to get their own shot enough. I want him to be that role that they asked C.J. McCollum to be 2 years ago when they said C.J.'s going to play a ton of point. And we're going to mix things up. And when he's not out there, when Brandon Ingram's not running the show, I want Paul in that
role.
So
run it back and just add Chris Paul, and you think that's going to make them a contender?
Well, no, I think they're definitely going to change something at the center spot. We know Valanciunas is moving on. There's no way that's going to work again with what Willie wants to do. So you're going to have some sort of change in the center spot. Now, do you have enough capital to go out and make a splash there? I don't know.
Draft class is weak, too.
Could you throw Zach Edey in that center spot, though? A little bit more athletic, a little more offensive skill, right there in the same category as Valanciunas. I don't think you're going to rely on a rookie to play 35 minutes a game.
And I don't know if I trust Willie Green to be able to coach up a center position
But my point is, I think the fit works. I don't think it's going to happen anyway. I don't think Chris would be interested in it. I don't think the Pelicans would be all that interested in it. But I would love the fit, and I think it would actually make you a lot better. Because, again, the difference between the Pels, they won 49 games in the regular season. That's the third most in franchise history in a regular season. The West was loaded, so it was tough seeding wise, but I don't think it's fair to look at the fact that they finished seventh and say that was the full potential of this group. I think they had a really good year that should have been better.
So how many more years do we need to have where we stop talking about this team's potential?
Well, that's what I said. It's again, this was a year where it wasn't just talking about the potential. You saw it. They won more games by a lot than they did a year ago. Now, did they win the biggest ones when they needed to? No, and so that's still a fair criticism. But they're also in a really difficult spot where I don't know how you tear it down. And that's the NBA. That's the toughest place to be, right? And there's a lot of teams in that category. The Dallas Mavericks, who everybody's excited about right now, are in an almost identical situation where they have the guy. They know Luka's the guy. They put Kyrie around him to try to figure it out. And it's kind of worked this year, but if they lose in the first round, they're going to be right back to saying, what do we do? And that's where most of the NBA lives right now.
Oklahoma City is the what seed?
The one seed.
And they're younger than the Pelicans, correct?
And they still have accomplished the same amount as the Pelicans. So that's where I struggle with it.
I love you to death, but you Pelicans fans make excuses.
It's not even excuses.
It's a making excuses, and it's like, I asked your guy David Griffin. He's supposed to be the franchise savior. And if you're telling me that having to win out of the play-in tournament is because the West is stacked, well, that didn't stop Oklahoma City from being improved. That didn't stop Minnesota from being improved. So they found a way to be able to be a top three seed, and the Pelicans didn't. Sorry, I'm tired of hearing excuses. Hour one's done. Hour two coming up.
This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. They say good things come in threes.
Cause it's one, two, three.
Time to test that theory. Here is RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
Hour two has arrived. I love when we have healthy discussion. James Mesh didn't want to be part of it. I think he was scared off, Dawson. Did he seem a little scared?
We were low on time.
He just stayed in the producer's area. He's like, I'm not coming out. Look, healthy discussion about the Pels. It's a good discussion.
I think we decided. I think we got it all figured out.
We did. We circled around to that.
We'll have to share that at a later date, though.
Well, yeah, we'll put that in our back pocket.
Yeah.
Hour one was very good, right? We had our Today Specials where we talked about all the college baseball teams that were in action last night. They got wins. We also talked about the Pelicans. They did not get a win. They were mooey, mooey, paw, paw. And then we also talked about Cajuns and Tigers softball, huge matchup on the diamond over there at Tiger Park. We spoke with Jay Walker, the voice of the Louisiana Raging Cajuns as well, and we talked some Astros and we talked some Pellies. Right now, though, we're going to kick off this condensed hour number two because we got Houston Astros baseball coming up versus the Atlanta Braves. So that means we're going to be off the air at 12:40, and we're going to pass the baton, if you will, to Robert Ford and Steve Sparks for Astro launch live from Minute Maid Park. But we're going to kick off hour number two, though, by talking all things LSU with our guy from the Shreveport-Bossier Journal, the award-winning columnist, reporter, movie and television extra extraordinaire, and a man who has an impressive hat collection as well. Ron Higgins joins us now. Mad Dog, good day to you, bud. How are you?
How are you, boys? Are y'all doing good?
We did great. We were in your neck of the woods, and it was disappointing not to see you at the box last night. I sat in your spot, and no one seemed to care because there was about seven or eight other spots where people didn't show up.
Oh, plenty of room. Plenty of room.
We could stretch our legs, yes.
Yeah, so I mean, I hope you took my spot and assume my character of like being confused and muttering under your breath, is Johnson changing pitchers again? Really? Does this guy overmanage or what? You know, so I hope you did that. I'm sure you did. I appreciate you.
We appreciate you, my friend. All right, so beating UNO is nothing to write home about, right? It's a midweek game. That they had some good hits last night. They were able to pound the ball. The pitching was, it's a work in progress. Like when I see this team play, they're a work in progress. And I know we talk about the lineup and we talk about so many guys that haven't got real playing time until this year and how much of a difference that is. I don't believe their pitching rotation and their bullpen is as good as they imagined it. And I think Jay Johnson's a little surprised by that. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I think he thought he'd have better starting pitching for sure. And he hasn't. Luke Hoblin's okay. Luke Hoblin is what I thought he was last year at Alabama. He was okay. And then after that, you really have nothing. Gage Jump, and I didn't realize he came off arm surgery, but he's been gone for a year. But you're well into the season now. You should be looking a little bit better than you have been. And they started Ackenhausen last Sunday, but they haven't won a game on Sunday yet. So Sunday hasn't been any good. The Sunday pitching hasn't been any good. And then your relievers. I mean, I think he's tried everybody. Now he's trying, young guys who I guess must be pitching better in practice than the other guys because he's trying. He went with them over this past weekend, and he said it in his Monday radio show that he'll do it again. He'll stick with the guys that are producing. And they got Missouri this week. Missouri's record is not much better than LSU's. I mean, it's 5-10, the SEC East.
But they did beat Florida in a series.
Oh, yeah, they beat Florida. I mean, look, everybody LSU's got on this schedule, they can lose to, okay? I mean, okay, A&M, they got A&M, which is now number one. They swept Vanderbilt, and Vanderbilt swept, they swept LSU, and they think they won the series. Alabama swept Arkansas, and Alabama's still on LSU's schedule. LSU's not going to make the NCAA tournament. Okay, they're not. They're not. They're going to bare minimum have to go 10-5 in the second half and win a game in the SEC tournament. I haven't seen anything yet that gives me any kind of confidence that's going to happen, because acting like this back half of the schedule is a lot easier than the front half, and maybe so as far as ranked teams. But from what I see, all these teams have, on this back half have, as somebody said for Auburn, have gotten, and Ole Miss have gotten better, and LSU, I'm sorry, they haven't. They haven't gotten better. And Jay Johnson has tried everything. He's, you know, God, he's, you know, changes his batting order every night. You know, different starting pitcher on Sundays. I mean, all kind of stuff. And they're just not getting any production in from anybody anywhere consistently, and that's the problem.
I wanna focus in on the pitching because he started Thatcher Hurd last night, only lasted two innings. He went through half a dozen pitchers, not a single guy pitched more than two innings. And maybe that was the approach, the Johnny Holstaff approach, right, for a midweek game. But Thatcher didn't look good when he was out there. And it reminds me of last year, because you and I talked a lot and with Dawson about this last year on the old show, was how bad Thatcher Hurd looked for most of the year until all of a sudden he turned it on, right? And Jay could turn to him, and he was good in the postseason and helped him win a national championship. I think Jay thought, oh, well, Thatcher's going to be able to ride that momentum, build on that confidence on how he finished the season, and he's going to be one of my three aces. And I don't know. Are we getting to the point where maybe Thatcher's just a lost cause or a guy that just comes out of the bullpen?
Guy just comes out of the bullpen. I don't think he's going to get any better this year. You know, I'm just thinking, you know, listen, I mean, last year, was LSU's pitching past schemes great? It was okay. Was it, I mean, when schemes would come out and get you that first win automatically, that gave you a leg up the rest of the series, and that really helped. LSU's offense covered up a lot of their pitching last year. I mean, they just go out and get runs, okay? I mean, some people score runs on LSU, and LSU just go out and get runs. They could go out and get runs. This team can't get runs. It can't get runs. It's awful with you know, it's batting .229 in SEC play with two outs. It's .217 in SEC play with runners on base, and .194 with runners in scoring position. So it's not covering up the problems it has. I mean, last year, I mean, they were 86 percentage points better than .194 with runners in scoring position. And the other ones were out there. They had a much better team last year. They had better talent, more proven talent, more experienced talent. And if you're an LSU fan, you just hope this is a year of growing pains to get to next year to be better. I'm Jay Johnson's about to find out. You can't have two bad years in a row here, okay? You can't. I mean, they give you a pass one year and say, yeah, well, you lost 7 of 9 starters and your entire starting rotation, your best reliever, and you know, no matter how good you recruit, you're still young. But they end up pass next year.
So
none.
Ron, I did want to ask you, though. You say you don't think this team's making the regionals. With an RPI still under 50 and six games in SEC play coming up against teams that are in the bottom of the standings in Missouri and Auburn, you're not seeing that being a chance for them to gain some confidence, maybe win 4 out of those 6 games and get themselves back on track with still a lot of time left?
Okay, well, but they got to start winning some series. And I mean, and honestly, besides Missouri and Ole Miss, I mean, and maybe win Auburn, but they're not going to win series against Texas A&M. They're not, and Alabama's been playing great. I don't see if this team hasn't given me any indication it's gotten better. And I think that's what's driving Jay Johnson crazy, because, okay, if he thinks a guy's all of a sudden consistent and hitting, okay, I'll move him here in the lineup. And then he just goes, you know, 1 for 12 in a series. He's like, well, Jesus, I put him there, he's not producing. Every button he's pushed hasn't worked. You know, okay, I'm going to try Ackenhausen on Sunday on pitching. He was okay, nothing great. I think everybody he's pushed had worked is driving him insane, because, like, okay, I'm trying this, I'm trying that, I'm trying this. I mean, and nothing has worked. I mean, and again, they had their best pitching weekend in SEC play this past weekend, holding Tennessee to 17 hits, runs and 21 hits. But then LSU has its worst offensive series. It only produces 8 runs and 17 hits in 3 games. So it's like, I don't know if there's any miracles left, any buttons to push miracles. I mean, they can't trade for anybody on the other team. These are the guys they got. And I haven't seen anything this year that's encouraging from weekend to weekend. But they get to point in games where they need to make the plays to win. They don't. The pitchers don't make the 2-out pitch to get out of the inning, or there's an error, or you got runners on in scoring position and you hit the double plays, or you let opposing pitchers off the hook. It's happened every single SEC series. And I don't know why it should change now. I mean, I know the competition, say maybe Missouri's not as great, or Auburn's not as great. I mean, Auburn's the only team in the league has a worse record than LSU in league play. But that said, I know LSU fans they're hoping, okay, listen, in the past, even under Mannary, they always rallied. I mean, mid-April on in May, they rallied. They'd get back in it and play great. But I don't remember an LSU team under Mannary playing this poor for this long in SEC play at the start. He had a rough start his last season. They lost their first 2 or 3 series, and then they bounced back right after that. They just started coming back. This team hasn't done that. And you see the same thing happen every game. That's alarming. But, I know the coaches are trying hard. I know the players aren't taking shortcuts. I know they want to win. I know they're trying hard, but it's just not working. Maybe if they can win this series, that'll give them some confidence. Like, okay, we're going to make a run. Then they have, I think, Auburn coming to Baton Rouge and A&M in consecutive weekends in Baton Rouge. So, they're going to have to really rally. Even with a low RPI, they got to rally because they just hadn't done anything yet in the SEC. Not a thing.
And last one for you, Ron. Wanted to switch over for softball for a minute because they got a big win over the Cajuns last night. This has been a team that started off so hot. They've been up and down in SEC play, but still above 500, ranked 5th in the conference, and one of the best, probably the best softball conference in the country. What have you made of where Beth Tarina's team is at this point in the year, still ranked up there near the top 10?
She's got some good transfers. They battle. This is a very competitive softball league. It's like most sports in SEC. It's got a lot of good teams in the sport. And they've lost some, the Ole Miss series. That was a tough one to lose. Missouri, another tough one to lose. They've been A&M, they did fine. Florida, they lost 2 close games and could have won that. The Auburn series really hurt. And so when you look what they got left, Tennessee, Arkansas, on their schedule, they're in position to host a regional. Will they get a seed? That's yet to, I don't know yet. But they will definitely host a regional. And I think for the most part this year they played pretty well. They had the really really hot start, and that really helped them. For the most part they've hit the ball well. They're batting .318 as a team. I think they've got some good pitching from Cindy Benson and Kelly Lynch. Lynch had the no-hitter the other day. So can they finally break through the College World Series this year? I don't know. I mean, at the beginning I thought they would, but you can't afford to lose home series in the SEC, and they've done that.
Well, Ron, we appreciate your time as always. We will talk to you again next week. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a great week.
That's Ron Higgins of the Shreveport Bossier Journal there talking about the struggles of the LSU baseball team and the triumphs, at least of late, of the LSU softball team. We'll take a timeout here. Plenty more on the other side. This is RP3 D'Lo and Mesh.
Go check out our YouTube channel at ESPN_SWLA for the latest episodes of Miguez Mindset, Over Par, and so much more. That's ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station on YouTube.
You know, it's not...
We welcome you back into RP3, D'Lo and Mesh. Mike's got to be on. There's two ways. It's a give-and-take relationship with the microphone.
And James and I both fail at making sure microphones are turned on for me today. He earlier in hour one, me here in hour number two.
So we're even. Mwah.
It's a give-and-take.
Game three later today. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the EFCO Development Studios. I was just going to compliment that not everyone can pull off a salmon-colored polo shirt like our guy Clint Domain, the world-famous one. But he made an appearance inside the studios and
looked. It was brief, but he was here. Yes.
Zoom, in and out.
Problem solved. Boom. I'm out.
Boom. Done.
Going back to my office. Leave me alone.
You know, the best thing I've seen on social media today
is that Keon Coleman is considered the 33rd best prospect by Lindy Sports for this year's draft.
Well, no, but I did hear some stuff. I've been listening to some Keon Coleman talk. I think there's a lot of good receivers in this class, even aside from him. It's going to be tough for him. That might actually cause him to fall a bit. But
he's going to be an early second round pick if he does fall out of the first.
I think so. But, you know, 4.65 speed, a little concerning, but he's got that ability to create separation without the breakaway speed. And I think that's going to be pretty important for him.
You're going to like this comp.
Okay.
Because it goes back to Seminole history. You know who he reminds me of?
Who's that?
He reminds me of Anquan Boldin.
Well, and that would certainly be a career. Anquan
because
Boldin,
he catches everything around him. Like, yeah. Boldin wasn't the fastest guy. Remember, he also had the injury that hurt his draft stock coming out of Florida State back in the day. But you know what Anquan did a lot? Caught the football.
He did catch the football.
That's what I want my wide receiver. Call me old-fashioned. Okay, I like having wide receivers on my team. Check it. That can catch the football. It is crazy, I know, to want the position group that their job is to catching the football. I want guys that can catch the football, and then second on that list, I want the guys that catch the football to know how to run routes. And you know what Keon Coleman knows how to do? Run routes.
You know, the Keon Coleman thing was an aside. It wasn't where I was exactly going, but it could have some related aspects of it. The Saints could be in the market for a player like Keon Coleman.
Maybe
but
Gale him in the second
Benson,
round?
Huh? The wonderful owner of the New Orleans Saints, has been on a trip
and the Pelicans.
As well. Yeah. Been on a trip to Rome and Germany, meeting members of the Papal Foundation, and she presented Pope Francis with a Saints jersey recently. That's got to be a good omen. The Pope's a guy I always like having on my side when it comes to anything, really.
Oh.
Especially,
man is appreciative of the Pope.
So I think that's got to be a good omen for the Saints, right? They are the Saints. They already kind of have a built-in advantage there with, you know, the religious figures in our world, and now you get the Pope on your side. Maybe that's helpful.
Yeah, but you also have Dennis Allen as your head coach. Let's head out to the Mike's Marine hotline. Mike's Marine, keeping it on the water. Paul has some thoughts about the Golden State Warriors. Paul, good day. What's on your mind, brother?
What's going on, fella? Say, I was talking about the Warriors. I think everybody is missing two ingredients that's about this Warriors. Remember, the GM left them. He saw they were going downhill. But the man that put them all together get no credit, Jerry West. People say Mark Jackson because something about him being a god parent of Steph or something. But Jerry West put that team together. And as you notice over the years, the pieces changed a lot dramatically. They don't know what to do, how to keep it going. Plus, you got to add age.
Well, they don't have glue guys, Paul. That's the big thing. Like when they constructed that title run, they were able to get a guy like Sean Livingston who had devastating injuries and got him to come off the bench. They got Iggy, who was an all-star in Philly, to come there and be their sixth man. Like, they made smart moves throughout that entire run that Jerry West helped to orchestrate. And then, you know, you're correct, he stepped aside. And they kept it going. And when I look at Golden State, they've tried to draft some guys, and those guys feuded with Draymond, and they didn't get along or they weren't good fits. So they've shipped out the younger guys that they've used their lottery picks or their first-round draft capital on. Mm-hmm. They're not there. Right, and they got Steph, who still plays at a high level, but Klay Thompson looks lost. Draymond looks washed. So, what are you going to do? Like,
true, and you, Klay is unhappy about that money thing. He's very unhappy.
Someone will throw stupid money at Klay, right, this offseason because he's going to be a free agent. but it's going to be a terrible team. It's going to be Charlotte or Brooklyn or somebody somebody like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what's going to happen.
And you know the crazy part? We all know this is a young man's game. It is.
That's correct.
You look at these new legs coming in. You look at Golden State old. The Lakers is old. They old.
They are old.
And you look at Sacramento. You look at OKC. You look at these guys are young and they're running the floor. OKC know how to draft and put a team together. For some reason, they always start with a point guard. They are beast mode, and you look at...
You could argue they have the best front office guy in Sam Presti in the league because he just knows how to do this.
The man is awesome. Yeah. I mean, even the guy over there in San Antonio, they just know what they're doing. I just think the Warriors is old and everything you said, but I do have a question for you. Do y'all think it's time to blow up the Pelicans? Everything they tried haven't worked yet. It's kind of like when we talk about Saints or some other teams. I think it's time to start over because what they've been doing hasn't been working.
I just don't see how you start over, though, in this league with the way it is, how difficult it is to acquire talent that you can win at the highest level with. Starting over is just putting yourself in a situation like where the Detroit Pistons have been for now 7 or 8 years, which is just bottom feeding. Mm-hmm. And the Pistons have had a couple number one picks. And Kay Cunningham's not a bad player, but they're still horrible. And so I don't know how you start over. In the NFL, you can start over to an extent, right? If you draft a franchise quarterback, you can start over. In Major League Baseball, it takes longer, but the Astros did it. They started over. It's so hard to start over in the NBA.
The only thing that you could do, you can't do a complete overhaul to Dawson's point because, first of all, this draft class isn't very good, right? So even all the picks that you have from the Lakers and the Bucks that are essentially worthless because those are teams that are making the playoffs, and so you're not getting lottery picks.
But we can't keep blaming the coach. Keep firing, keep changing the coaches. It
starts at the top.
I mean, Lakers got a coach problem. We know that. I don't think Willie Green is the problem.
Paul, I'm going to say this, and I've said it before, and I told Dawson during the break, that the Pelicans are never going to be a true contender as long as David Griffin is running the team. And I've said that for years.
No, you can't do that to my boy. No, you can't do that.
I'm going to do it all day long because he's been deemed a genius because LeBron James decided to come home and play for Cleveland. He had nothing to do with that. That wasn't his decision. Mm. Okay, he's failed at drafting guys, with the exception of Kyrie, and they were terrible. LeBron comes home, and David Griffin gets a lot of credit for winning a title. Because LeBron decided to come home. And they think that Griff can't figure out the center position. Griff can't figure out coaching. Griff can't figure out how to build a roster like Sam Presti can. And everything people think Griff is what Sam is. And that's the problem. That's the problem.
You know what? I can't argue that. Good points that on top of that. I can't argue that. I just look at the talent they have and have for over the years. It's like they should have been past peak. They should have been saw a championship when they had Rondo and the two twin towers there with AD and Cousins.
Well, you could argue if Cousins doesn't get injured, but Paul.
You have talent there. But Paul,
if you go back, Paul.
I think the Zion thing needs to go. Keep Ingram, but Zion and CJ got to go. You gave up Drew Holiday for CJ. I'm trying to figure this out. Ingram is not a problem. I mean, he stay hurt. I'm just trying to figure this. Zion train got to go, man. It got to end.
No, he's the face of the franchise, and Griff is attached to him. That's not going to happen. If they would trade any of their guys, it would be B.I. because that's the guy that would be you could possibly get something back for. But going back, look, if Cousins doesn't have what Dawson, his knee explode, right?
Achilles.
Yeah, right, his Achilles. That team looked like it was a legitimate team that was ascending. If DeMarcus doesn't have that injury that essentially derailed his career, right? He was never the same guy after that. It's a great what if for them. But Zion's going to be the guy. It's going to be an interesting offseason for the Pels because they're going to have some hard decisions to make here. What are they going to do with their roster? How are they going to improve it? The draft class isn't very good. Can you go get someone in a trade? And what are you willing to give up? Like, that's the thing. Who are you willing to give up to go get the pieces that could put you over the top?
I agree. And I leave off with this, gentlemen. I agree 100% with y'all. I thought he was going to go get Chris Paul. Chris Paul, he might be old, but he's a point guard that could have helped. You're not asking him to give the young CP3, but a good point guard would help them to distribute the ball to all these players and make them better. CJ is not a point guard. I mean, we saw what he did in Portland. He got his name off Dame. But I'll leave y'all with that, fellas. And one last thing. I know you're listening over there, Mesh. Orange and blue skies. See you soon. Have a blessed week.
There it is. There it is. We got to take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll wrap up today's show and get you set up for Astro Launch. That's all next right here on ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
Go sign up for our rewards club at ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com so you can score tickets, gift certificates, and much more. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Wrapping up this edition of RP3, D'Lo and Mesh, as we're about to turn it over to Astro Launch for the Houston Astros as they take on the Atlanta Braves in Minute Maid Ballpark. Let's update you on the poll question of the day one more time. We had asked you on Facebook and on X, what was the biggest issue in the Pelicans' loss last night to the Lakers? 43% of you have said CJ McCollum struggles in big games. 39% of you said Zion getting hurt late. 11% saying B.I. doesn't play much. And then 7% saying Willie Green's coaching. We did get one more comment. Ralph had said, definitely need an all-the-above option. Sucks Zion got hurt late, but props to him for finally showing up against the Lakers. And that was true. He ended up with 40 points on the night, had 11 rebounds, 5 assists, and then also tackled on a steal and a block.
There you have it.
There you go.
I've got a little bit of a Masters update for you guys. I know the tournament's over and we have a winner.
Oh, wow. Okay.
One, a man was charged for transporting millions of dollars worth of Masters merchandise and memorabilia stolen from Augusta National. So that's interesting. Talk about... And for those who don't know, Augusta, they don't sell merchandise except there. You have to go there to get it. Now, obviously, people try
on site. Yeah, you can't.
People try to take advantage of that by buying up in bulk and reselling it. But, you know, whatever. They try to prevent that stuff. The other thing that I thought was awesome, there was a picture that surfaced of Scottie Scheffler at a local tavern after he won the Masters. And everyone was going, oh, he had made such a big deal about going home to his wife. He said Meredith was down, and she went with him. And she finished her Heineken Zero, and they went home. Of course, a non-alcoholic beer there because she's pregnant. But how about what the Schefflers are an outstanding family. That's via Golf Digest. I thought it was a fake story, but it's Golf Digest, so I'm going to assume it's real.
I want to thank our guests, Jay Walker. They were real. Longtime voice of the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. Ron Higgins, Shreveport Bossier Journal, LSU columnist and reporter. That's going to do it for us today. We'll be back on tomorrow. We'll have the great one, Jim Gazzolo, on, Les East as well. Max versus JP is your pitching matchup today at Minute Maid. JP's ERA is 8.22, so he could use a good outing
to
get that down.
Max's is in a similar spot. We'll see.
Yes,
something's got to give there, right?
Something's got to give. Astro Launch is next. Robert Ford, Steve Sparks will be your host, and then they'll be on the call. Game 3, Braves, Astros, here, ESPN, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.